Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Tuesday edition. Today's date is the 27th day of June, 2006, and my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. I am your host for this program. It is the details for the contact of this program is IamTheWitness@hotmail.com or IamTheWitness.com, and of course, you can go and download our work there. The gentleman that we have today has been a visitor on this broadcast twice before. He always brings lots of provocative information about our subjects. And I'm very happy and proud to have David Pidcock with us today. David, are you with me?
Yes, I'm with you, thank God.
Well, David, you know, I want to let the listeners know we're on a cell phone connection all the way to outside of London here, so
that's right.
It may not be perfect clarity, but we're going to work with it anyway. Much has been happening since the last time we spoke, David, and you mentioned today in our private call that many things are starting to percolate over in Iran. Would you elaborate on some of the things that have been going on over there with their government?
Well, it's interesting now to see that while I think the statements of President Ahmadinejad have been provocative and maybe ill-timed at one level, of course, what's been said has been said by many others beforehand, including a very great number of Orthodox Jews and other people, honest people, who have point out when he spoke about the Holocaust. Of course, this was a huge outcry. But what's important to remember that the issue of the Holocaust. I'm looking at an article that was published in the American Hebrew magazine on October 31st, 1919.
Yep.
And it was by Martin H. Flynn, who was the former governor of the state of New York at that time.
Yeah.
And the article begins, "The crucifixion of the Jews must stop." From across the sea, I'll read a part of the article. It says, "From across the sea, 6 million men, women, and women call for us to help, and 800,000 little children cry for bread in the face of death, in the throes of starvation. There is no place for mental distinctions of creed." So this was 1919, and it goes on to say, in this catastrophe where 6 million human beings are being willed towards the grave by a cruel and relentless fate. Now, I think everybody will agree that 1919 was not 1941.
Yeah.
And but why was this claim being made then, which was completely bogus?
Well, you know, David, it's interesting to note that we have that article at the top of one of our articles that we wrote. And it's fine because it's great to have a commentary on it, because basically what was happening is they were groping for a reason to use these figures and to use this deception and foist it upon the world, this 6 million number and the suffering thing. And it must have come out of the original planning for this back in Theodor Herzl's time, if I'm guessing.
I think it goes back well before that. I'm talking to a number of of groups that are studying the actual situation and going historically, because the 6 million seems to be a fixation. And but what is important is that there was a mini Holocaust going on during the time of the Bolshevik Revolution, when, of course, many of the Orthodox Jews or the religious Jews were actually being exterminated during the Bolshevik Revolution. But it's just ironic that the same numbers are used, which somebody was saying it seems to be part of this idea to do with Kabbalah, the 6 million being a significant number.
Well, you know what I found out too, David? There's something else that maybe you can confirm or deny for us. There were a lot of people within the Jewish community of dead set against Zionism. And in fact, if you listen to many of the scholars that have written on the subject, many of the Jews in northern Europe and eastern Europe that were against the Zionists were actually the ones earmarked for destruction. In other words,
Definitely. This is true, and it's clear from Ben Hecht's book, you know, Perfidy, the betrayal of those Jews who were Orthodox, and of course knew they shouldn't be in Palestine or even planning to move to Palestine.
Well, so now, well, basically, what we've got though is we've been trying to do is make a connection between the Zionists and the actual slaughter of Jews, and you know, whether or not the numbers are right. I got to tell you, I haven't looked into the Holocaust because it can get me put in jail. However, I can tell you this: it seems to me that there were a lot of suffering Orthodox Jews and regular Jews who were not interested in helping this Zionist cause, that were actually shipped off to be killed. And it seems as though this was done so that their opposition would be exterminated. Is that something, a fair statement to make?
I don't think there's any doubt that this was in fact the case. I'm just reading a piece here by Dr. Fields, who said, since the Second World War, Jews have been treated with silk gloves. Without Auschwitz, there would be no Israel. This was by Nathan Goldman, the founder of Israel. And that was in Paris Match, December 29, 1979. It's part of the thing that they have held everybody to ransom over this number. Of course, the downplaying or the downsizing of the numbers, say, from Auschwitz from 4 million to 1.6, is one of these things that should not go unnoticed. But the problem is, of course, one of, you build up this major issue. Now, the fact that one person dies, and I'm sure this has been well countered by others, that if one was killed, then it was outrageous. But the issue is that there were 20 million, I think, people killed in the Second World War, and 60 million as a result of the Bolshevik Revolution, which was an entirely Jewish revolution, and the Turkish Revolution.
That's
which
right,
was entirely
the
Jewish as well.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the point being that the prelude or the dry run for the Holocaust of Jews by Jews was of course the Armenians, but what the Turks are blamed for the extermination of, I think, 1.6 or 1.3 million Armenians who were starved and killed. But the ones in charge of Turkey from July 1908 was an entirely Jewish-run country. It still is today, the Donmer, who we know of. But like Ataturk, the destroyer of the Islamic Caliphate, the stroke, was both parents were Jewish. And the whole revolutionary movement, Bolshevik Revolution, the Turk Revolution, and of course the financing of all the upheavals has been from the same group.
That's right. Well, you know who said this the other day, and you may be aware of this man. He wrote the book, Eliminate the Opiate. His name is Dr. Marvin S. Andelman. Now, he came out and actually confirmed much of what you're saying right now. What he did not do, though, David, was he stopped short of saying that the foundations of Israel itself were also made by this same group. He talked about Sabbatai Zev. He talked about Jacob Frank and the Frankists. He talked about all of it except for saying that these Sabaeans are still in control of Israel and were part of the founding group of Israel. In other words, he did not admit on this interview that, in fact, Israel was founded by this very same criminal organization.
Yes, this is completely correct. And I just have some figures here that if we look, say, at the Soviet Holocaust of Christians, the Russian Kulak farmers from 1924 to 1930, was 15 million exterminated. The Holocaust of Ukrainian farmers, 1930 to 33, 7 million starved to death. The Holocaust of Russian political prisoners, 1919 to 49, 12 million perished. Pol Pot, of course, Communist Holocaust in Cambodia, 2.5 million. Armenian Holocaust of the Turks, 1915, was 1.54 million people. And this was all by Jews who are the followers of Shabbat Zvi, who was the most successful of the false prophets.
Well, and he was also the first to use in a large way this idea of being a crypto Jew, a crypto Zionist. And basically what Edelman said, this is important. He said there was a council of the four continents that was convened in Northern Europe to discredit this man. They said he was a poser. He was Jewish, but they said he should be excommunicated from the Jewish faith, because what he was promoting was that evil was easier to control, take over the world with, than goodness.
This is the antinomian group who believe to do evil is also to do good, and that therefore if you do evil it brings about the second coming, or that evil is equal to being to doing something good. I remember Baruch Goldstein, who killed those people in Hebron with a machine gun in the mosque.
Yes.
I think on his sarcophagus or on his, he said he murdered to sanctify God. Now that sounds to me extremely bizarre. That you can kill and say that you're doing this to please God.
Well, see, this is interesting, because I told you in our private conversation that his presentation went out over Israeli national radio. Now, that's
right.
Very strange, because he did talk about Sabbatai. He talked about Sabians being excommunicated from the Jewish faith by this consul. But he also said that they turned through Kabbalah and through their Kabbalistic ways to evil, and the evil that they're foisting is with a very powerfully run organization that takes no prisoners.
Correct. Let us do evil that good might come. This is one of the shibboleths, or one of the maxims, and we have to wake up to what is actually done, and the fact that we have certain misconceptions about people who worship God and worship Satan. Of course, Israel Shahak's book, Jewish History, Jewish Religion, The Weight of 3,000 Years, is one of the most telling and revealing books. In fact, he survived, I think he was in Auschwitz or Buchenwald, and he became a professor of organic chemistry. He was living in Israel, and his book is one that says that the idea that of monotheism, a monotheistic view, is that people misconstrue the idea that people in the synagogue are all worshipping God. So one out of ten may be worshipping God, but the other nine will be worshipping Satan because they fear him more than they fear God. Now, this is astonishing, but that's what Israel Shahak has proven.
Well, when we look at this now, here's the interesting thing, because he does, Edelman talks again about crypto-Zionism and crypto-Jews being placed, well-placed around the globe, and in many cases, they're in a covert status. And you may not even, they have no compunctions about declaring themselves Christian or Muslim. And he talked about the old man in the mountain. And he talked about, you know, many in the Islamic community have over the years been duped by people who claim to be of Islam, and in fact were not. And of course the Donma is a perfect example. But is that example still relevant today? And are we experiencing that same kind of deception?
Yes, I think this is weapons of mass deception. Of course, this was, I think it was Ben-Gurion who said that our first line of defense is incompetent Arab leadership, but Muslim leadership generally has been very, very poor because the choice has been all the good people, like in Egypt, you'll find that the prisons are maybe full of maybe 10,000 people are in prison without trial. I've attended some of the trials in High Step with judges from the United Kingdom, and the best people are in prison. The worst people are running the country. This is true in practically every Muslim country.
You take a look at the connection between King Hussein of Jordan and the Masonic lodges of the Middle East, and
yes.
His son being a Mason, of course. And in fact, it seems to me that Saudi Arabian kings were actually installed back in the beginning of the last century by these same people, weren't they not?
Indeed. Well, the Lawrence of Arabia, you see, the prophecies about the coming of Antichrist, and what we're seeing is actually the establishing of the kingdom of Antichrist, Dajjal, or Dagala as he is in Aramaic, because the New Testament, or the language is those who will come in dressed as wolves in sheep's clothing. But the establishing in all the countries, the fall of that Lawrence of Arabia actually fulfills the prophecy. If I can just recount what the prophecy is, the Prophet Muhammad said to his companions, have you heard of a city which passes on the sea? Yes, they said, understanding him to mean Constantinople, as it was then in his day, before it became Istanbul. He said that the day of judgment will not occur till 70,000 sons of Isaac will attack it. But when they come, they will not fight with arms or shower it with projectiles. They will simply declare there is no God but God, and God is the greatest. They will recite it for 3 times, and it will be open to them. But they will enter into it. When they're gathering the spoils of war, someone will say, verily, Antichrist has come out. And they will return to him. Now, this is in a collection of hadith called Sahih Muslim. It's a very, it's unimpeachable in terms of its authenticity. The second thing is in the same hadith is reported, the same prophecy is in another collection called the Mishkat. And he said, from the date of this occurrence, count 6 years to the Great War. Then after 1 year, the emergence of Antichrist and revolution, which enters at the Arab house, followed by mutual hatred and hostilities between the Arabs. Now, what you were describing earlier, if we look, the fall of Constantinople, according to the British archive, the British embassy, was on the 8th of July, 1908.
Mm-hmm.
If we count 6 years from that date, it brings us to July 1914.
Right.
Archduke Ferdinand is assassinated, and World War, the Great War, as the prophet called it, begins exactly at the end of at the end of July 1914.
Well, I want to stop you for a second because we know for sure that Zionists were behind the beginnings of the first war anyway. So basically, can I make the supposition that they were actually making scripture come true? Not, in other words, scripture wasn't coming true on its own, but they were formulating it.
Well, I think that this is the problem for the Christian and Jewish community. They have missed out on the fact that they have all overlooked the fact that the prophecy for the children of Abraham from the Nile to the Euphrates is actually populated by the sons of Abraham's firstborn, not Sarah's firstborn. So the prophecy is fulfilled. The problem is that to try and reclaim the Nile to the Euphrates, Greater Israel, which is what's happening, to try and force the events to happen, let us do evil that good might come, of course, is part of the Christian Zionist agenda to try and make the second coming happen.
Yeah.
So it is partly correct. Well, I'm not saying partly. I think it is correct. But the fact is that events would occur and the outcome would be known to true prophets. But look look at the sequence of events. When you look, then from the prophet then says, count 6 years from that date. We come to July. Then he said, miss 1 year. Now, if you look at the Times history of the war or the archive material, it says in the Times history during 1915. There was no open revolt in the Hejaz, in the Arabian Peninsula. Then we come to June, July of the following year, 1916. The emergence of Dajjal is synonymous with Lawrence of Arabia, the Arab revolt in which everybody now, all the Arabs hate each other since that day. And, of course, the installation of all the corrupt governments began from that day with Gertrude Bell, Lawrence. And that's what we're seeing now, the outcome of that.
Now what does this prophecy, if you forward it to 2005, 6, 7, 8, 10, in our present day, what do they have planned for us if you take a look at these documents? I mean, since they're following this themselves and they're making the events happen the way they'd like, we talked privately about Jerusalem already having laid the groundwork for its capital city and the rest. What are their plans?
I have the Golden Report in front of me. And this is The Roots of Evil in Jerusalem. It's by Jerry Golden. The website is www.thegoldenreport.com.
Mm-hmm.
And now, what's intriguing, this man, Jerry Golden, shows the photographs of the actual building of the building which will house the government, the solitary government in Jerusalem. And this is actually was funded by Rothschild, and of course we have then the Israeli Supreme Court in Jerusalem, which will be the seat of the court of mankind, as predicted by David Ben-Gurion in his Look and Life magazine articles in 1962. Everything according to Ben-Gurion has come true, including his prediction was by 1987, Glasnost and Perestroika would take place. Of course, Gorbachev was brought to power, and everything in this article in the Golden Report shows everything that's being built currently in Jerusalem, and everything's ready. As I'm saying, the center, the judge, where the judges will be, everything's ready for the emergence of the Antichrist himself.
Well, now, what are the dates for that release? I mean,
the events that are now currently happening, we see the prophecies about the occupants of Al-Quds or Palestine, that the believers, the ones who are holding the covenant of Abraham, are the Muslims. These are the ones who have stuck rigidly and hardly to the covenant with Abraham. And the ones who have usurped that are the Zionists, who come there against the orders of God. And the conditions that now the prophecies even speak of America. I've republished this in an article called "When Bush Comes to Shove." It was published in the Gulf Today. I can email that to you. But the prophecies are very accurate, and almost everything, including Saddam, is mentioned by name. And that the Arabs will love their hero, Nasser, and everything is mentioned in the prophecies. And this has been kept hidden because the control of Turkey and the Hadith and all the libraries has been controlled by Jews and Zionists. And, of course, where does the famous prophecies of Nostradamus come from? Are all plagiarized from these Hadith.
Really?
Yes. You can see Hitler is mentioned by name, and one intriguing point that the secret forces of the Russians would attend the death of Hitler by name. And only 3 years ago did the lady who took Hitler's skull or parts of it to Stalin, was it known, the Observer published her admission that she took the skull and jaw, part of Hitler's jaw, to Stalin, who never even admitted it to Zhukov that he had it. So the secret forces of the Russians are mentioned in the prophecy. And I can say for sure that Nostradamus plagiarized all his stuff from the prophecies of Muhammad, alayhi salam.
Now, what does it say about the people who fight these bad guys? What does it say about our successes? I mean, I don't want to be, this defeatist thing here.
No.
But how is it going to manifest itself in our battling back against these criminals?
Okay. Well, I think that just to be on a light and a hearted note, somebody said, "Who said defeat is good?" And my brother-in-law said that Nelson Mandela's corroboratory. So on a lighter note, that's defeat is good, but only in that context. The fulfillment is that the second coming of the Mahdi, who is the grandson of the Prophet, will occur, and then the second coming of Jesus, and there will be a combination of Muslims and Christians and Jews who follow the Torah correctly. And that will, the stand will be made, but the Muslims will be defeated on two occasions. A complete extermination of one army, but the final outcome will be success, with Jesus then basically combining with the to lead the Muslims into that success. So this is all very positive stuff, but unfortunately, as somebody said, you know, the genius of Satan is convincing half the world he doesn't exist, and the other half that they're not following him.
Well, see now, you know me, David. We've talked about dozens and dozens of times on the phone.
Mm.
I don't subscribe to this stuff very much. I subscribe to the fact that these people are crazy criminals.
Yeah.
And in fact, the fact is, I acknowledge that they are using the Holy Scriptures as a guidepost for their criminality.
Yeah.
And I also know that they can be defeated. I know
they will be defeated.
They will be defeated.
But each generation is tested. And it's like, if it was justice, then each generation is tested with the same trials. The most difficult trials are the ones that we're seeing the world existing in now. But most of the problems are self-induced. The problems with environment and all these things are driven by the stupidity of man in trying to maintain a system, particularly a monetary system, that is destroying him and his environment.
Well, that's right.
So Thomas Jefferson's brilliant quotation, you know, is that the modern theory for the perpetuation of debt has drenched the earth with blood and crushed its inhabitants, and the burdens are accumulating, and mirrors what the Prophet's cousin Ali said: we withstood the weight of the iron, the stone, and the lash, but we could not endure the burden of debt. So the holy families can't endure it. How can ordinary people? So this is the root of the problem, and we have to have the American Constitution re-implemented with the greenback dollar. That's the only way out for the world.
Well, you know what? Here's what I know. This conspiracy of fiat money took its root back in 1913. However, it really blossomed in 1970 when we thoroughly got rid of the gold standard and allowed a fractional reserve lending to go crazy. And I think the Zionists knew when they decided to do that there was only a limited number of years that they had before the entire system imploded under its own weight.
If you read the protocols, the alleged forgery of the Elder Design, read Protocol 20 or 21, when they come to power, they will abolish interest, because no society, no government, no community can survive without it self-destructing while ever you have an element of interest. It is this is the ultimate root cause of all our problems, and unfortunately, the Muslims are now more involved and indebted through the system of interest. Fiat money is not a problem, providing, as Lincoln understood and as David Ricardo understood, and you go back to Plato and Aristotle, go back to Lagash, the problem is escalating debt and interest. These, we can solve all the world's problems, frankly, once we address the real issue. But as John Maynard Keynes said, this will spell the euthanasia of the rentier, the one who rents money. So everybody's fighting the wrong enemy. They're encouraged to fight each other, but not the real enemy, the Goliath of usury.
Well, and we know that there are about 20 significant families that control about 95% of the world's financial lending, and that comes out of Goldman and Kahn and Loeb and Warburg and...
Kahn and Loeb, yeah. But look, the issue, the one thing I think that the Muslims have now got hung up on, there was, I attended a conference in recently, and they were talking about the gold, the dinar. The myth of the gold thing is that you don't need a gold standard, you need a commodity standard. If you grow rubber, you need to be able to have the rubber backing your
monetize through actual commodities.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the gold thing is fine if you mine gold and you set the price of gold. Then the price of gold is not set by the miners of the gold or the owners of the land. It is set by NM Rothschild. 10 o'clock at St. Swithin's Lane every morning and again then in the afternoon. Only when you sell something that is backed by something you have, and it could be wealth in the terms of skills, manpower. That's the real issue, and the gold standard was always a myth. And when Churchill was going to hang Montagu Norman after putting it on the gold standard, which was designed to destroy the British Empire and transfer the control of what Britain controlled to America. This was the game. It was the transfer arrangement.
Well, you know, what's happened over the last 25 years is every single central bank in the Western world has emptied their gold out of their vaults. Now, I'm wondering where the heck all those tons of gold went, because from what I understand, there is a conspiracy to confiscate the world's gold from all of these banks. Are they planning on imploding the world currencies and then turning around?
Yes. If you speak to Bernard Leiter, the designer of the euro, who is against a single currency, and talk to people who understand, he said the present system could collapse in less than 2 hours. The gold issue is one, you dig it out of the ground and then you bury it in the ground in somewhere else. But gold is the myth. The gold is there, it's something that's useful, but if you put as Sonny said, if you put a ton of gold on the piano, it will never play Mozart.
Well, but see, here's the interesting thing about the gold, though. Somebody has been confiscating and buying it up. It's not in the French vaults anymore. It's not in the British vaults.
No.
Who's taken all this gold, and where are they putting it?
Well, the same people that have always held the control of gold and blinded everybody with this, of course, N.M. Rothschild and the usual suspects. But that's because they have seduced everybody into believing that money should be backed by gold. It need not be backed by gold. It needs to be backed by real wealth and warm bodies. So if you think, well, we own all the gold, you can't do anything, this is bullshit. Pardon my French. This is a nonsense. It's useful, but not to the extent that we've been seduced into believing. This is fool's gold. As the Quran says, if we gave the children of Adam a valley of gold, that would be insufficient. He would want another valley and more besides. So it is a seduction into believing the gold. Salvation Island, 1932, by the French Canadians, is a marvelous story, and that's something that we should get on the website. I'll try and get a copy to you.
Well, now I got a question. There is a wild card in this whole battle, and
it
not necessarily in the leadership level, but in the national level, and that's China. While they've used the financing from the West to build this new economy, there's still 1.2 billion people over there, and as often as they've tried in China to control that population, it often falls into anarchy and disrepair. I mean, they are a wild card in this, because I can't see there's any way anybody outside of a Chinese that is going to take full control of that nation. How does this fit in?
Well, the protocols say that we will use the guns of Japan and China and Russia. I mean, this is clear. China is there. The Chinese people are very, very good people. But of course, it's a gigantic South Sea bubble that's being built. But you have to have a credible enemy if you're going to use them then as the next Soviet Union or the next, after the Muslims have served their purpose. You'll have to have something that's been, you've created, and then turn it into a perceived enemy. So the agenda will be one that we're creating maybe the final meltdown scenario, and China will not be easy to deal with, but it's part of the game. It is a game, I'm afraid.
How about getting me in contact with Ahmadinejad or Mahathir Mohamad there, David? Is that possible?
Either one of these men
they've got a world voice, and you know as well as I do, there's nobody speaking more truth than I am. And I mean, I've got a decent soapbox over here, and I'm wondering how can we get more of the fighters' words out. I mean, of course, you know, Mahathir Mohamad is in his 80s, but he's still quite healthy and working hard at stopping these people.
Well, I think that it's interesting that there was a delegation of Neftali Carter rabbis went to Tehran and attended a very big conference there with Ahmadinejad. That was a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
So there are people beating a path to his door. The important thing is that the things that we're talking about also need to be broadened and to show that he is not a lunatic, that all he's saying is actually voicing what you've said more than one time on your programs and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But it needs to be sustained and it needs to be articulate.
Well,
But Mahathir, of course, is extreme. His English, of course, is very good. And we'll have to see what we can do to arrange that.
David, I got to tell you, because for me right now, you know, America is the most polluted country when it comes to voices. Everybody's trying to pollute the message that we're putting out. Now, we're getting traction because of the honesty that we bring to the subjects.
Mm.
And when you listen to these broadcasts, it's very hard to deny the research we've done. However, there's so many voices out there. One way to get above that is to bring someone of note on board. And when you do that, of course, you start sweeping up a lot of the people that would not normally listen.
I tell you what, there was a brilliant article by Norman Mailer, which I read before I went to Dubai. And it's a fantastic sort of critique of America. It's one of the best I've read. So that's something. Look out. It was in an interview he did on BBC Television 2, BBC 2 Television.
Mm-hmm.
I have some details. Can you text me your current email? Because I don't have your current email at the moment.
But I am the witness at Hotmail. Hotmail.com.
Oh, still that one. Okay, right.
Same one.
Well, send you Norman Mailer's article. It's absolutely brilliant.
Well, David, you've got lots of stuff going on, and I do want to thank you, you know, for this, because I know you've got other things that you're important to you. However, I want to ask you one other thing.
Sure.
Is there something that we can my listeners can do aside from telling everyone who will listen what can we do to build a stronger front internationally to really bolster this truth that we're telling?
Well, that is very what you're doing is I think is absolutely essential. There is a hope that I mentioned before that there will be an English language 24/7 news channel that would actually be prepared to broadcast and on a sustained basis the facts of the Holocaust and the facts about Pearl Harbor, the facts about all these things that it needs to be sustained, and I'm working on that. People need to, of course, it's easy to pontificate and talk, but we have to apply the rules to ourselves first before we are critical of others and see how we can improve our own lot. But I'm afraid that it's word of mouth is probably the most effective. You know, the Lib Dems in the UK could never rely on the media because nobody listened. So word of mouth and broadcasts like this are critically important. And for people to copy them and to distribute them, have local study groups. And if you pass it on to one, you know, it may take a while. I estimated it would take 50 years. I'm 30 years into this program, like yourself, of trying to, you know, wake people up today, you know, to what is true.
Well,
but the enemies are not people of belief, but people who, are basically ego-driven in many respects, and they're not charitable enough.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, David. Every time you come on, it is an education for my listeners, and I want to let you know that I appreciate these efforts you're making, and We need to stay in closer contact.
We're here to serve, as the prophets have said.
Well, I am here,
we're here to serve.
Yeah, that's right. And I want to thank you again, and make sure you drive carefully. And
I will make sure you've got a car.
Okay, I'll be looking for that information. Thanks, David.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye, and God bless.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was David Pidcock coming to us from his mobile phone outside of London. In fact, David has been working feverishly to try and put some method of getting this message further afield. Of course, it's not an easy task, considering that the media is so sewed up by this group that we're fighting against. And so what I would like everyone to know is that the methods we've used of grassroots spreading of this information is the one that David recommends, and it's the one that we've had the greatest success at. So I want to thank you for listening today, and I want you to pass this on. I do recommend that you listen to Rabbi Edelman's piece on his it's a confirmation of our research is what it is, and then to listen to what David had to say. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith saying goodbye and be well. Bye-bye now.